Chapter 35. Ariane's heart pounded, threatening to explode or quit beating entirely. She sucked in breath until she could steady herself from the shock. The Baron Asper Carver had not been removed from the room and interred as she had naturally expected. Ariane stood 3 paces in front of his corpse, wondering if she were positioned at the very spot where young Davin had watched his father take his own life. Clothes and bones lumped about the chair, all shrouded in dust, everything a uniform grey. A pistol and the bones that once helped pull its trigger sat to the right of the chair on the floor, finger still on the trigger. The skull had fallen backwards onto the desk, lying on its side. A cracked hole in the crown showed where the bullet had punched through. The draught she felt on her feet blew in from a crack in the window. Tattered drapes had collapsed to the sill. She approached more closely. The rusted ball that hadn't had the power to punch through the window after punching through the Baron's head had rusted almost to powder on the side of the sill. So the servants had it wrong. Davin Carver had watched his father die, but in his horror he had not had the body removed. He had locked the door tight and never gone back in. Was it in anger? In sadness? Was he simply too callow at that tender age to deal with such a morbid tragedy? And why had he never remedied the situation in his older years when Frostborn had regained its prosperity and he achieved manhood? What had passed between father and son before the fatal moment? Too many questions. 2 open liquor bottles sat next to the skull on the desk. Perhaps they served as agents to dull the pain and judgment of the man who had ruined his own estate and lost his wife in the process. As she scanned the desk, she noticed a letter trapped beneath one of the bottles. The wax seal had long since crumbled, but the bottle had kept the paper folded shut. Dust added to the filth on her hands as she extracted it from the bottle's entrapment and blew the dust off. The writing was faint, but the addressee still legible. Edgemore Carver. A creak somewhere on the bottom floor brought her up short. She shouldn't be there. Cursing her own curious nature, she scooted out of the study and into the hall, listening for any footfalls or movement. After several minutes of silence, she calmed herself and pulled the door haltingly shut, locking it fast. With a glance over her shoulder, she padded back to her room and reignited the lantern by the bed. Her petticoat was a mess of clinging dust balls. She tried to pick them all off and throw them into the embers of the fire, but it still looked like she had gone for a stroll out in the dirt. After cleaning the wax off the key and returning it to the nightstand drawer, she washed her hands with water from a basin. Not until she was warm in her covers did she carefully pry open the brittle parchment. Davin's father was no penman, his hurried strokes evidencing a frenzied mind. Cousin Edgemore Carver, I write to you now in the most dire of circumstances. Frostborn has long belonged to the family of Carver. As you are no doubt aware, I have, through my carelessness, brought it to ruin. Mistake me not, I'm not writing to beg any money of you or ask for your deliverance for myself. When you read this, I will have left my sorrows behind for the tranquil rest of the grave. Nor do I blame you for our estrangement over the years. You may think that upon my death that this property will fall to my son, and that if you were to lend some assistance that it would profit you nothing but to have him take over the estate when its creditors are satisfied. I write to offer you some incentive. I attest with this document and my very blood that Davin Carver is no Carver at all, and that I do not recognize him as such. He is the product of an indiscretion of his mother and is a bastard. He has no right to Frostborn or any inheritance other than what I or any Carver would give him out of charity. He is, I'm afraid, a boorish, stupid lad who would do no honour upon Frostborn or the family name. Therefore, cousin, the title of Frostborn rightfully belongs to you, my next of kin. If you see fit to use your resources to put Frostborn's creditors at ease, you can claim Frostborn and its lands for yourself. If you are wiser than I have been, it may bring you good fortune, and perhaps elevate the family of Carver to respectability once more. I will instruct Davin to carry the sealed letter to you upon my death. You may decide what to do about Frostborn and the boy then. My only wish is that Frostborn remain in the family, and if it does, that it be possessed by one with a true right to the name, not an ignorant bastard. As for young Davin, give the indolent lout your charity or throw him to the wolves, I care not. Farewell, cousin. May the flame watch over you with more vigilant eyes than it has watched over me. Baron Asper Carver. Ariane found her hand at her mouth. Davin Carver was a bastard. He had slaved to build up an estate not rightfully his, one his father intended to strip from him. Did Davin know? Was that why he had shut the dead Baron up in his room? That last conversation between a father and his wife's bastard son held the key to everything Davin had become. Asper Carver considered the boy Davin an unrefined idiot. The man Davin was anything but. His hardships had changed him, but if Davin really was indolent before his death as his father had claimed, what had given the orphaned boy the iron to change and rescue the estate single-handedly? More likely, the man simply hated Davin for the infidelity he represented, and presented deceitful aspersions about him to help his estranged cousin feel better about saving the estate. She closed the letter and set it on her lap to think. Twice, she pushed the paper toward the candle's hungry flame and then pulled it away. If Davin did not know he was a bastard, then Ariane was content for him never to know. He would never elevate himself as the queen wished if he knew of his disinherited status. But whatever her concerns for Davin's feelings, or the queen's plans, she knew that the real fear in her breast was that Davin would never think himself worthy of her if he knew. He already thought himself beneath her. Ariane wouldn't have it. Again the edges of the paper kissed the flames, and again she pulled it back. She had no right to burn the letter, or to even have it. She had no right to have intruded upon that secret room which Davin had shut and locked away. But surely he would have known that after he faked his death, someone would eventually find the bones of his father. If everyone had thought the son dead, then the revelation of the father's corpse would become just another odd story that would fade with time. With the son alive, the unburied father would become a scandal. Sleep paid her little mind that night. From that day forward, she kept the letter on her person at all times, not wanting any prying servant or theft to expose its sensitive contents. It took Emile Ironhorn 2 days to empty Frostborn of all her possessions, all bought with Baron Carver's money, and direct the servants to load them on the wagons that would accompany them south to Ironhorn. Her waspish, temperamental behaviour improved, and by the morning of the 3rd day she bounced out of the house and into the carriage where they waited for her. Emile was ready to travel, hair curled to perfection, a parasol against her shoulder to shield her face from a bright morning sun. She wore a snow-white dress with a red sash about her waist, appearing ready for a ball rather than a long slog south. They would drop her off at the Ironhorn estate, and then make for Hightower, where Ariane hoped Davin would be waiting for her.
"I do apologize, Lady Hightower," Emile said once they had all settled into the carriage. "I have been beastly of late, but with the shock of Davin's return and the impending need to move, I just haven't been myself. I do hope we can be sisters now, considering the connection we share."
Ariane was about to return some pleasantry when shouting inside the house pulled her up short.
"Driver," Emile yelled, "let's go."
With a sharp snap of the whip, the carriage jerked to a start. As they pulled through the gates and out onto the road, the ruckus behind them continued to build, though it quickly faded as they turned east and south. Emile smiled to herself, staring happily out the window.
She's done something.
Ariane craned her neck out the window on her side, the cool wind reddening her cheeks. As the trees slashed by, the gaps in the forest canopy revealed a column of smoke rising into the sky. Emile giggled.
"What have you done?" Ariane demanded.
Her full lips parted and she put her hand to her mouth.
"Why, I think I may have been careless about my bedding getting too close to the fire. I was in such a rush. Oh dear, I hope nothing untoward has happened."
Ariane reached out and slapped her, hard. The smile disappeared and Oriana and Missa stared at Emile in shock.
"Back to Frostborn,"
Ariane yelled to the driver, leaning out the window.
"Go back this instant."
It took a moment for the carriage driver to acknowledge her request. Turning the carriage around on the wooded road proved difficult. A red welt bloomed on Emile's fair cheek, her eyes stung and angry. Ariane stared right back, cowing the woman with the indignant fire of her own expression. By the time they could see Frostborn again, the smoke billowed into the air, the smell stinging Ariane's nose. The house staff and a host of horrified townsfolk gathered at the gate, staring at the conflagration. Some wept. Oriana wept. The mighty trees that Emile hated burned with the house, the fire hissing through their branches as the sap boiled out. Ariane stepped down from the carriage, Missa and Oriana following. Nothing could be done. The house and the grounds were a total loss. Servants jogged forward with the horses and the hunting dogs from the outbuildings, sparing them a miserable, burning death. After a few minutes, the house crumbled. Some few of the walled stones fell inward as the roof collapsed. Haze thickened about them, seeping out to enclose the gathered crowd in its smoky embrace. Ariane shook her head and wiped her eyes, thinking of Davin. A strident voice startled her. Oriana.
"You wretched beast!" Ariane glanced back to the carriage. Oriana had returned, yelling at her mistress through the window. "I will not work for you another day. Not one more. I would rather starve to death in the hedgerows. You should drown for this. Drown and die."
Ariane pulled her away and embraced the girl as she shook in grief. Inside the carriage, Emile stared forward, eyes firm with just a hint of a smirk on her face. The woman had no scruples, no conscience whatsoever that Ariane thought she could appeal to. Davin had indeed paid a price for marrying the woman, and the price had just risen again. More townspeople arrived at the scene, their fresh sighs of dismay adding to the mournful hush of sad voices. Slowly the towering flames diminished, ash falling like grey snow. The sheriff had arrived and began questioning the servants. Oriana broke from Ariane's embrace and strode up to him immediately, anger plain upon her face. "It will do no good to accuse her dear child," Ariane thought. Emile had been clever enough not to admit to anything other than an accident. Horse hooves on the road turned everyone's attention. A cadre of mounted officers, road-weary and scruffy, rode toward the scene, gawking at the fallen manor house. To Ariane's surprise, they wore the blue and gold of Belshire. These were the High Sheriff's men. Why had they come?
"We seek Lady Ariane Hightower," the lead rider said, hushing the din.
"I am Lady Hightower," she said, stepping forward.
The officer rode over, face severe, stopping his horse and dismounting. He unbuckled his saddlebag and dug through it, producing a sealed letter.
"Lady Ariane Hightower, you are under arrest for high treason by order of the High Sheriff of Belshire."